This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Westbrook accelerates and scores! Puts it down!
Then he mean mugged the whole crowd up under the rim, and I know the Lakers fans like that, even if they don't want to admit that.
Covington over Davis. Yes! Oh. Now Westbrook puts the move on Bradley. And it hits! Covington, yes, another three. What a debut in a second run with the Rockets for Robert Covington.
Yeah, good morning, H-Town. Filling in once again for Payne and Pendergast. You got my guy, Cecil Shorts, six-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan, and lover of all things sports. Of course, each and every day, you got Chris Jones holding you down on the boards. And you got me, Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet. And last night, the Rockets put together an impressive performance on the road in L.A. I guess you can call them shorthanded after trading away two of their centers. You know what I'm saying? And they beat the Lakers 121 to 111. Russell Westbrook goes off for 48 points, 8 rebounds, 5 dimes. They couldn't slow him down, couldn't stop him. The recently acquired Robert Covington chipped in 14-8 off the bench, had two huge threes late in the game to help the Rockets pull off. And all the starters scored in double figures, man. It was a hell of a ball game by the Rockets. And James Harden, he was off all night, only had 14-7, but the Rockets still pulled out a really, really impressive win. Man, what did you think about the Rockets' performance on the road, Cece?
I think for the fans, for the media, it was good to see a good showing after all the trades. And it was some doubt. We had multiple people call in and give us their opinions, you know, on was it a good trade or was it a bad trade. And we heard both sides of the coin. But last night playing against one of the best teams and one of the teams that will be competing for the NBA Finals, you had a good showing. And last night I saw a tough defense. I saw toughness on both sides of the ball. And it was good to see if Harden was off, Westbrook could step up and score. Other guys were – Daniel House, to me, looked really good last night. On the defensive end, he was hustling. He knocked down some threes. Of course, Covington coming in. And when you got a new guy that comes in, and he said in his interview with Mark Berman, I just got to come in and do what I've been doing. I don't have to change too much. I'm just going to come in and play my style of ball. And he looked really good last night. So it was impressive. Now, to be honest, does it change my mindset moving forward? I don't think so. I think the Lakers and other teams will figure out, because honestly, this was brand new for the Lakers. They've never seen this style of basketball or this roster of basketball from the Rockets. So they'll make their adjustments, and the other teams will too, but they looked good last night.
Yeah, they look good, man. I really enjoyed what I saw out of Russell Westbrook under this version of the Houston Rockets and the way that he attacked the basket all night long, had guys on their heels, but the other guy that really impressed me was Robert Covington, man. It was his debut with the team, and he had some thoughts after the game.
That's what I'm here for, you know, being able to be that, you know, the lineup that we have, you know, I'm able to, you know, add a lot of versatility, you know, add more versatility. You know, guys can do a lot on this team, but, you know, me being a, you know, lead defender that I've been accustomed to being, you know, adding value to this team, and it just shows that, you know, we can do a lot and we can be very, very, you know, good at it. So, you know, just got to keep building, and I got to keep learning the system that way. You know, I can keep, you know, get even better. I was just out there pretty much playing, and, you know, my teammates were talking me through a lot of things. So, you know, it's a couple of plays where they was like, man, if you do that, if you continue to do that, like, man, there's going to be a lot of different things that we ain't got to do. So, but, you know, my teammates just, you know, put me in the right position. You know, like I said, I just did what I was going to do, and I was asking.
Now, think about that. He was pretty much out there freestyling last night. Didn't know what was going on. He didn't know the system. Even though he was here for a very short period of time, that was years ago. Mm-hmm. And so you come in on your first night and you contribute and you do things that all his teammates could see, like, hey, man, what this guy brings to the table is going to help us get to the stage that we want to get to and get to that next level and help us be the type of team that can compete for NBA championship. And Russell Westbrook was one of his teammates that commented on Covington as well.
It's huge, man. His ability to be in space of four, not just that, defend and make big plays down the stretch and shoot the basketball, and was big tonight.
Yeah, man. Listen, Russ understands that when you have a 3-and-D guy like Robert Covington, it's going to help everybody tremendously. You saw him make the hustle plays. You saw him get some key blocks. You saw him hit those two threes late in the ball game. The corner three where he raised up over AD. Like that, you don't expect them to come off the street and make shots like big shots like that. The score was 112 to 111 at that time. And the shot clock was kind of running down. He's like, hey, he just pulled up and hit it in AD's eye. And AD is a hell of a defender. AD had a couple of good defensive possessions against Harden in the game. And so he hits that big shot, and then a couple of possessions later, he's the trail guy on a little fast break, and they hit him, and he's a wide-open three. And so the Rockets put the Lakers away, man. And so that was good to see him perform so well early. And then the fact that all the starters, like all of the starters, scored in double figures, and, of course, Covington came off the bench and chipped in with 14. That's the type of performance that it's tough for teams, especially bigger teams, to deal with, because the Rockets just came in waves and waves.
They were running, man. They were getting up the court, and it was good to see them space the floor. Like, you've seen everybody on the outside surrounding the three-point line, and the Lakers had to make a decision, like, of what's going to happen. And the way Russell was attacking the rim last night, even Harden, even though he was off per se, he was attacking the rim. Then if they came down on him, he would dish out to somebody, and they were hitting the shots last night. 45% as a team from three last night. When you can shoot like that, and multiple guys, I think Covington hit four threes last night. Daniel House was hitting. A lot of guys were hitting last night. When you can do that consistently, you're gonna have your shots of winning games.
Yeah, man. They created opportunities for guys like Eric Gordon to get open threes. But there was one guy that I kind of felt bad for watching the game last night, even though he had 11 points. But P.J. Tucker, a couple of times, he got caught in situations down low where he was getting dunked on and
it was
thrown out the lane, and he was falling all over the place. I'm like, come on. And it reminded me of that picture on Instagram with the stilts yesterday. And that's the first thing I thought. Like, man, P.J.'s – it's gonna be a rough playoff run for P.J. Tucker, because he's going to be put in situations where he's dealing with guys that are 6 and 7 inches taller than him, probably outweigh him by 50, 60 pounds. But – he's going to battle, and so that's what you need, and you're going to get out of P.J. Tucker. So, like, I remember saying this a couple years ago when the Rockets fell short to the Golden State Warriors. I said, man, y'all got to protect P.J. Tucker at all costs. He shouldn't have to go through this. In this city, he shouldn't have to pay for a meal for the way he performed in that playoff run where they fell short when Chris Paul got injured. And so I'm like, man, listen, it's going to be the same way this year. But P.J. Tucker is one of those dudes, is a heart and soul guy, and he's going to be put in bad situations night in and night out, especially when they're playing against the best teams. But he's like one of those type of dudes that's going to sacrifice and give you all he can while he can. And so it'll be interesting to see how it goes going forward.
I love Pete. He's probably my favorite Rocket. This is everything you explained. He knows his role. He's going to play tough and fight every single night. And honestly, that like translates to the rest of the team. That his motivation, his willingness, because like you said, he's going to be mismatched every single night. Now, I do think they'll find ways to help him more often. It'll be more for team defense, especially when they play bigs like the Lakers and stuff moving forward. The Lakers did have 62 points in the paint last night to the Rockets 40, so I do expect other teams to try to get them in the paint more, even more than 62 points.
Yeah.
But, you know, Covington, and even the guy they traded for in Bruno, oh, I forgot his last name.
Man, see, I was trying to figure out how to pronounce his last name. I heard it multiple ways, but it's Bruno Caboolo. I
think
Caboolo or Caboolo, one of them.
So you're gonna need him Bruno. To help some type of way. Especially come playoff time.
Are we really thinking that he's gonna give something to the Rockets?
He had some good minutes 2 years ago with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Okay.
Now, is he gonna do anything with this team and get any run? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either. We can prognosticate all we want to, but I have no clue about this kid.
No clue.
And hopefully he does bring something to the Rockets. Filling in once again for Payne and Pendergast, got my guy Cecil Shorts, 6-year NFL vet, Houston Texan, and of course myself, Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet and former Houston Texan. And I tell you what, man, the trade deadline came and went yesterday. Of course, the Rockets made one trade. Their trade, of course, was to send Jordan Bell. That's probably the shortest stint I can imagine that an NBA player has had with one franchise, where he gets traded one day and then the next day he gets traded to another place. Of course, Jordan Bell gets traded away to the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Rockets get back in return a Brazilian I guess, 4 or 5 guy that's going to play, you know, a post player.
We'll see.
Bruno Caboclo. Bruno Caboclo. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, man. Somebody got to help me with that. But Bruno, we just going to call him Bruno. He's going to be one of those guys that's so good or so much of an anomaly. We're going to use one name. Just like we did Nene, we're going to do him as Bruno. So Bruno comes to to Houston. And so that was that trade. That was the last trade that the Rockets did at the deadline. Hopefully they make another move post-deadline, maybe use a mid-level exception or something to that effect. But around the NBA, some of the major trades that were consummated was you got Andre Iguodala traded from the Memphis Grizzlies. Of course, he didn't play at all this year for Memphis, but they trade him to the Miami Heat along with Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill. And the Memphis Grizzlies get Justice Winslow, James Johnson, Deion Waiters, and Gorgui Dieng.
Oh, Deion.
So what did you think about that trade by those guys?
Both teams got better. I think the Heat moved up into the number 2 best team, the second best team in the East with that trade. I think Andre is a guy that's experienced. He understands what it takes to win. I do think it's some tread on his tires, but when you got a guy like him and Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill, so now you're taking pressure off of Jimmy Butler to – because Jimmy's going to have to score and check the best player every night.
Yeah.
And when you got guys like Andre and Jay Crowder and even Solomon that know their role, that both, all three of them, especially Crowder and Iguodala, are really good defenders.
Yeah.
You can take that pressure off of Jimmy and he can rest for, I don't know, 10 or 11 minutes and be able to come through in the clutch. So I think the Miami's got better, and then you just add to Memphis's young core.
How big of a deal do you think it is that Gallinari was unable to, the trade was unable to be consummated to bring him to Miami as well? Jimmy Butler was talking about it earlier in that day, that, you know, bringing in both of those guys, talking about Andre Iguodala and also bringing in Gallinari was going to be a huge deal for his team, and he was looking forward to it, and they ended up falling short on the trade.
Gallinari can score, man. He can be somebody else that can shoot the three. He's able to offensively to open that thing up and add to what they already had in Miami. So having him would have been – they might have arguably been – I'm not going to say the favorite, but they would have been between them and the Bucks to come out that East if they would have added him. Jay Crowder can do some things offensively, more of a spot-up 3-and-D type of guy.
Yeah.
But he's definitely helping on the defense end. So, I mean, you never know. You mentioned maybe – Oklahoma City cuts them or whatever the case may be. We'll see what they do after the deadline. I know Woj is on ESPN talking about it right now, but we'll see what happens with that.
So Clippers land Marcus Morris in a 3-team deal. So the L.A. Clippers will get Marcus Morris and Isaiah Thomas, and then the New York Knicks get Maurice Harkless and a second-round pick and a first-round pick, and then the Washington Wizards get Jerome Robinson. So the Clippers already with a second seed in the West. They add a piece like Marcus Morris, who is exactly what you want, especially coming down the stretch in a playoff run. How much better do you think the Clippers got? And are they now the favorites in the West, in your opinion?
I think so. If you look at what Morris did this year, I'm looking at the stats right now. He was averaging 19 and 5 before the trade.
Yeah.
43% from the three-point line. So you're adding that to this roster. And the type of him and his brother, he's a twin. Him and his brother are some dogs. Like they're tough.
They be ready to fight somebody all the time.
They're ready
don't they?
To fight.
Just like Anthony like Mason. They take them nowhere.
They are the guys you want on your team. So the Clippers just got tougher, and they got better on defense. And you already got Paul George, who's great on defense. Kawhi Leonard, who's great on defense. Patrick Beverley's great on defense. Now you add Marcus. Is it Marcus or Maurice?
It's Maurice. Oh, it's Marcus. You know
no, it's Marcus. It's Marcus. Now you add Marcus Morris, and it's like, okay, it's more. Doc Rivers is loaded up over there. And I know Marcus is excited to be over there, man. He started with San Antonio this year, opted out of that contract, went to New York. You know, New York is going through what they're going through. Now he's on the contender. And this is going to be a fun, fun playoffs for the Clippers.
Yeah, man. Any way you can get yourself out of the New York metropolitan area playing for those Knicks, man, it's already a good situation for you. You go all the way across the country to L.A. and you put yourself right smack dab in the midst of a title hunt. And so I'm happy for him because he's going to bring something for the Clippers, but that's going to be something that the Rockets are going to have to deal with in this playoff run. It's like, yeah. Hey, man, you got a team like the Clippers that were already stacked. You add another piece like Morris, and so they're going to be tough to deal with. if the Rockets end up having to meet up with them.
You think Isaiah Thomas will be able to do anything? Give you some type of minutes off the bench maybe? Or I'm not sure what he was doing in Washington, but.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea, man. I really, he's one of those guys that at one point he was one of the better players in the league. And then he got traded from Boston, and then he's kind of fallen off. And if you look at it from Boston Celtics' perspective, they're like, yeah, we traded him. And people were like, oh, well, you know, they, you know, that was wrong the way they traded him. But apparently they saw something that wasn't there.
Jonesy just said that the Clippers are going to waive him.
So they're going to waive him.
He'll be a free agent.
Okay, well, if he's a free agent, maybe he can find him another home. But he, like I said, he hasn't been the same guy since he got traded. I don't know if that took something out of him. Mentally, but he just has not been
hip.
The same guy.
He did have that hip injury.
He has an injury too, but yeah, he hasn't been able to come back from that. And last trade that we're going to get into is the Warriors and Wolves complete a blockbuster trade. You got D'Angelo Russell, Jacob Evans, and Omari Spellman going to Minnesota, and the Golden State Warriors pick up Andrew Wiggins, a top three protected first round pick, and a 2021 second round pick. So the Warriors get Wiggins. Does he really fit with what they got going on out there in Golden State? I'm not sure if he does or not.
I don't know if he fits, but he's a good talent. And if he doesn't fit, guess what? They could trade him and get some more assets.
I worry about trade. I mean, the way the NBA works, they seem like they always can figure out a way. But his contract is not the most. He's not the friendliest contract. that you could bring into your salary cap, and so. It'll be interesting to see what he does and what he brings to the table. They'll have a good trial period for him for the rest of the season to see how he fits with the guys that are there. But, you know, you have Clay and you got Steph coming back next year. It'll be interesting to see if he's even still there. Now, D'Angelo Russell going to the Timberwolves, what do you think that does for them?
I think it's good. I think Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns did not get along from all the reports that we read and what's going on. And they want to keep Cat happy. They want to make sure that, you know, He is the franchise. They want to keep him happy. So to bring in D'Angelo, who's a point guard, who's playing at a high level the last 2 years, it's going to be good. And they get some assets as well, as far as they get to keep this year's first-round pick, and they get another one in the previous year. So it's pretty good.
And filling in once again for Payne and Pendergast, got my guy Cecil Shorts, 6-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan. And myself, I'm Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan. And on the line is RadioDeal.com. Sports NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home, his new show out on radio.com/home, or search home on the radio.com app. Go check it out, and thanks for joining us, Ross. What's going on, man?
Fellas, what's up? I've had a lot of respect for both you guys over the years. Wade, you were a technician with great feet. I couldn't believe how long. What did you weigh, like 295 out there, holding it down for 12 years? That was amazing. And Cecil, anybody that comes from D3 and has the success you had, really, really impressive. They picked two good guys to fill in today.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that, man. And you know, you got Seth Payne on the show. He was the ultimate technician. So you got a feeling with another guy that understood that you got to play good technique to do so.
I think Seth is missing the show because he texted me like three times last night from his ski place up near Buffalo. Because I've been up there, and he wanted to know if we could meet up there. I'm like, no, I'm not going up there this year, certainly not this weekend. You got to give him crap next time he comes on. He texted me a picture of just his wife drinking a glass of wine as they were enjoying a night out. And then he texted me back and said, my wife thinks it's weird that I texted a picture of just her. And I said, yeah, it is.
I had to co-sign that, man. That's interesting. Maybe he's just very fond of his wife and he wants to let everybody know, especially you, that, hey, he is fond of his wife. But, hey, man, let's get into this proposal by the NFL owners, man. NFLPA had a meeting yesterday, I guess it was Thursday in L.A., talking about the current proposal by the NFL. One of the big points in the proposal is a 17-game schedule. Like, what's your initial takes on the current proposal as is by the NFL owners?
Yeah, so I would like to see more details, obviously, like the rest of us. But I would just say, philosophically, I'm not nearly as opposed to a 17-game season as a lot of current and former players appear to be. Now, I'll say this. everything is negotiable, right? Everything. But when you see some of the projections of what just one more game would do in terms of the salary cap, it's like $150,000 per player. Now, obviously, that's not like they're giving out 150 grand each guy, right? You know, that money gets spread over the cap, and the rich guys probably get more of it. The guys that are down the line, like I was, probably don't get as much of it. But I've made a couple points here, right? Number one, there really isn't that much evidence that playing one extra game would have that much of a detriment to player health and to guys' careers, right? I mean, look at the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots play 17 games at least every year, and they don't seem to have more injuries than other teams. I mean, they usually play more than 17 games. They usually play 18 or 19 or whatever as they go on in the playoffs. That's number one. Number two is just the economics of it. You know, if you're going to put that much money, I look at it like this, right? If you talk to all the guys in December and you've already done training camp, you've already done the whole season, and they say to you, all right, dudes, you know, we can be done after this last game, or we can all play one more game after that. And let's just say the number is 100 grand each, right? I don't know about you guys, but I'm not even letting any guy leave the locker room at that point. I mean, we've already done training camp. We've already done everything else for 6 more days, and at that point, you're barely even practicing. One more game, 100 grand. Fellas, come on, dude, 100 grand? And I hear the argument about a shorter career. Number one, I'm not really sure that's the case, but even if it was, if you're going to tell me – I ended up playing 7 years, right? You're going to tell me, Ross – you'll make the exact same amount of money in 6 years as you otherwise would have in seven. I'm down with that. That's a whole less season. So for those 6 years, it's one more extra game, but that's a whole less season of training camp, of practice, of the whole deal. I actually think it might be better for my body to get the same amount of money in 6 years that I would have gotten in seven, to do one more game for 6 years and not have to go through another training camp and be able to retire at 27 rather than 28. I just think, I hope guys are looking at this the right way. I'm not like all in for it. I do the Eagles preseason games. I'm not trying to get paid less money doing those preseason games, to be honest with you. Yeah. But I'm just telling you, I just hope guys, everything is negotiable. And if the money's right, I would absolutely consider the heck out of that thing.
Well, you mentioned everything's negotiable. What needs to happen? Because Richard Sherman has spoke out, and he's very against it. Other guys have spoken out against it. What needs to happen from the players, or from the players' point of view? Maybe what the players need to receive for the players to be like, okay, let's do this 17-game schedule thing.
So the proposal I heard was 48.5% of the total revenue. Right now, players are getting 47%. So what's on the table right now is a 17th game and two more playoff teams, which means two more playoff games. So you think about the new TV deals, the new streaming deals, and then a whole other week of games, and you also think about two more playoff games, that's a lot more money being increased. And then 1.5%. I'd like to hope, guys, that when I hear Richard and Okung saying stuff like this, I personally am hoping that that's all just kind of posturing and part of the negotiation. Like, I'm hoping they're just saying that publicly because they want the NFL to up the ante even more to 49%, 49.5, 50%. And if that's the case, that is awesome. I totally support that. If they're just adamantly, philosophically opposed to the idea of a 17th game, no matter what, that bothers me a little bit. And I think the only guys that really feel that way probably are like the super duper rich guys like Sherman and Okung, who already have like $50 million in their bank account. And I would just submit to you that there's a lot more guys like me that made the minimum every year but two than there are like them. And that maybe those guys like me aren't as powerful. But if you're a guy like me, I want the 17th game I want the salary cap to go up. I want the minimums to go up. I want that extra money because I don't have 50 mil in the bank. And if I can get an extra 100, 150, 200 grand a year because of this 17th game, I absolutely want them to do it.
I tell you what, Ross, like to me, the most important thing that the players should be looking for is lifetime health insurance for all vested players. To me, if they could make that happen, then everything else would fall in place. Now, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think the NFL would even seriously consider doing something like that? Because once you retire, and you know this, healthcare costs, especially for people that have played in the NFL for an extended period of time, it's very, very expensive. And if they were able to come to some type of agreement on that, I think that could change the game.
Yeah, so to me, that's almost a separate issue and almost an internal NFLPA issue, right? So the thing to negotiate with the NFL is how much money they get, how much money we get, right? Then as players, we can determine, all right, how much of that goes to the salary cap, current, you know, player salaries now, how much of it goes to the benefits, which is 401k, annuity, severance, the Upshaw health reimbursement account, what you're talking about, health insurance. Like, I almost feel like that is something we need to discuss internally because I've done a lot of work on that, and the cost is exorbitant. Like, it really is. Theoretically, what they could possibly do would be medical for the player only until he's of Medicare age. But even that is really, really expensive. And so, yeah, they could do that, but that's coming out of the money the players are getting one way or the other, right? So I personally wouldn't want that. I'd rather want the money in cash because, like, right now I'm on my wife's insurance. You know what I mean? So if you're going to take out – I mean, that's tens of thousands of dollars that would be taken out of the money we get in cash – to then put into that pot. I agree with you that it would be awesome for the players, and it's a very difficult aspect of post-playing career for players is getting health insurance. There's no question. But I think there's enough guys. Like, I could even get health insurance through one of my employers, through radio.com, through Entercom. I could get health insurance. So that wouldn't personally be a huge negotiating platform for me. I'd rather just work on getting as big of a split of the pie as possible. And then if maybe you want to make the health insurance 10 years, which I think it is now for guys after they're done playing or whatever, I personally think 5 years is enough for guys to figure out some other solution for the health insurance part of it. I talked to the NFL quite a bit about that when I was a player. And to insure your whole family, even to insure the player. Like, when you get into for life, that's a crazy amount of money. The only thing that might be realistic is player only until he's of Medicare age.
In 2011, Ross, I came in the NFL, and that was the year of the lockouts. So we had no training camp. I mean, no off-season activities up until training camp. So do you fear this year there will be some type of strike or lockout foreseen coming up?
Well, so this 2020 is the uncapped year. So there would not be anything like that until 2021. So I don't fear that for this year. And it seems to me like they've made enough progress that I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, we are light years ahead of where we were the last time. The last time, they didn't really start talking until the deal was expired. This time, they're trying to get it done by March 18th because the teams want to be able to prorate contracts out. You know, there are certain rules that you can't prorate contracts out and certain salary cap, like the June 1st thing. Like, you can't do that if there's no more CBA after that. You can't do a June 1st cut. Meanwhile, you can do things like franchising and transitioning players, whereas other years you can only do one or the other. So there's a bunch of weird things that come into play in the last year of the CBA that I don't think either side really wants, which is why they're trying to get this done by March 18th. That also enables them to get all the new TV deals and streaming deals lined up because they're about to expire. So I don't think so. I think the NFLPA is going to push this until March 18th. My guess is they push this until March 18th and they get the best deal they can from the NFL with the ability to go to a 17-game season and the ability to have an extra playoff game. That wouldn't happen until 21 at the earliest. It might not even happen till 22, 23. They'd have to get that figured out. But no, I don't think there's any type of a work stoppage. That would surprise me. They are so far ahead of the game at this point.
We're speaking with Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Ross Tucker here on Sports Radio 610. And man, I tell you what, the Houston Texans, they got close this year. You know what I mean? They played the Kansas City Chiefs, had a 24-0 win, lead in that game, and then Kansas City, of course, came back, eventually won the Super Bowl. What are your thoughts on the Texans as a franchise? How far away are they from truly being considered a Super Bowl contender?
So it's interesting that you asked me that, because everybody this week, everywhere I go, has been asking me about a couple things. One is myfrontpagestory.com, because I ask them to. It's the greatest Valentine's Day gift ever, which we can talk about if you guys want. The other, though, is the Chiefs being a dynasty. And if you look at the AFC, I just don't see that many teams. So first of all, it's really hard to be a dynasty, right? I mean, like Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Dan Marino, combined Super Bowl appearances after they got to their first one is zero. It's hard for a reason. But I don't see that many teams that I think really have it to really compete with the Chiefs in the AFC. Certainly Baltimore. Pittsburgh, if Big Ben comes back and he's ready to go. But then I look at it, I mean, maybe New England if Brady goes back there. I'm just not sure Buffalo. And to your point, Houston or Tennessee, I'm not convinced they can get there. I don't think the Texans are that far away. You know, with having DeAndre Hopkins, with having Deshaun Watson, of course, with having J.J. Watt. Problem is, I don't know how much longer Watt can play at a really high level, and I worry that the Texans don't have the resources, whether that's cap space or certainly draft picks, over the next couple of years to be able to get there so that they can compete with the Chiefs. Like, I don't think that they're light years away, guys, but they don't have first or second round picks the next couple of years. They don't, you know, they have to pay Laremy Tunsil. They have to pay Deshaun Watson. I just don't see a lot of mechanisms or resources whereby they're really able to close the gap on the Chiefs. It feels to me more like they're going to be kind of treading water in a good team, make the playoffs, maybe win a game, but probably not as good as the Baltimores and Kansas Cities of the AFC.
Bill O'Brien was just recently named the GM of the Houston Texans. And now, so he's the GM, he's the head coach. The only person I think in the league that does that is Bill Belichick, if I'm not mistaken. Or
he doesn't even, Bill Belichick doesn't even have that title, but he does hold
so
that.
So is he the only one in the NFL with that title?
He's the only one in the NFL with that title.
And last year he was calling plays.
Yes.
So do you think this is too much for Bill? Should he give up a few things? Or do you think he can handle it and get this team going moving forward?
No, I think it's laughable. I really do. I don't think, number one, that he has earned that. Number two, those are, I would argue, three full-time jobs, right? Like the offensive coordinator, play caller, the head coach, and the GM. Those, in my mind, should be three separate full-time, balls-to-the-wall, 14-hour, 16-hour-a-day jobs. To put them all on one guy, it's too much. It's too much. And look, I'm not mad at O'Brien for it. He likes calling the plays. He's the head coach. He's been able to get this power as GM. I think if I was in that position, I'd probably try to get that. I'd probably want that. I'm not mad at him. I think it's poor on the Texans for giving it to him. I don't think he's earned it. And I think the biggest issue is that it's going to be very hard for him to not make decisions based on a coach, which is more short-term as opposed to long-term. I believe that's what he did in a lot of the moves he made, the Tunsil move and others. I think he thought very short-term as opposed to long-term. And you know what? I guess it worked. They won a division. They won a playoff game. He got the GM title. And so it worked. You know, he was able to do short-term things that enabled him to get the power that I think he coveted. But I think he's probably a year or two from this whole thing being blown up. The issue is that Deshaun Watson is so good that I think it will allow Bill O'Brien to tread water for years, because Deshaun Watson will keep them as a playoff caliber team. The problem is, I don't think Bill O'Brien is going to be able to make the moves necessary to get them over the hump. And my guess is they will waste the prime of Deshaun Watson's career, which is a darn shame. You could argue on some level they've already kind of wasted what is the years when he was really cheap, because he's about to get real expensive. If I were him, there's not a chance in heck I would play a snap for them next year without a new contract for $40 million a year.
Really? You wouldn't go ahead and play out that last year and wait for the new CBA to where he could make even more money, depending on how high up the salary cap goes?
No, I wouldn't. I am a risk-averse person, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, dude, he takes some vicious shots. Like, he gets hit. I don't know how he stays healthy. Like, he takes ridiculous shots. And I don't think the new cap is going to make that much of a difference. Like, in other words, he's going to get $40 million a year. I mean, what's the most anybody's getting right now? $36 million? He's going to break the barrier. So maybe you could argue he should wait till Mahomes gets it.
Yeah.
And then after Mahomes gets it, then Deshaun should try to get more than Mahomes. But at any rate, I see it being like $40 million. I don't think, even though the new cap goes up, I don't think you're going to get one of these teams to break him off $45, $50 million. I mean, he's already going to get more than the highest guy gets. So he could wait till Mahomes gets it, or he could take $38 million now or $40 million. Maybe Mahomes gets $40 and Deshaun tries to get more than that. I don't know, man. I know this much. I wouldn't take the field next year until I get the money. So if you want to wait, see what Mahomes gets over the next few months, I'm cool with that. But I'm not letting monsters try to destroy me for a whole other season without getting over $100 million fully guaranteed for my family and $40 million a year.
Hey, I'm not mad at that line of thinking at all, man. So the Super Bowl came and
not
went.
Not everybody can play 12 years, Wade, okay? Hey. Not everybody can play 12 years.
Hey, it was tough enough for me to do it myself, so I feel you. But, hey, the Super Bowl came and went on Sunday, man. It was a good game. Kansas City ended up pulling it out 31-20. What were your thoughts about the pregame commercial, the NFL 100 presentation, and all that had to go into the game along with the Super Bowl halftime show?
Yeah, I thought the commercial was awesome with those kids delivering the game ball.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it. Like, there are these multi-billion dollar companies hire these ad agencies that spend so much time, so many dollars on these ads, and then the NFL has the best one each year. It's unbelievable. Like the Rob Riggle one for Bounty or whatever, that was garbage. Like, who are the people sitting around the table being like, oh, this is awesome, we nailed it, we crushed it? Like, I can't believe that. I wouldn't spend any money on the ad agency. I wouldn't spend any money on the shooting the commercial. I might just have a black screen and just have right on. Can you imagine for 30 seconds if all it said was, like, the business I'm trying to pitch right now, myfrontpagestory.com? For 30 seconds, all you had was a website. You can't tell me that people wouldn't be like, what is that? They would Google the crap out of that. Like, 30 seconds, just like, Is my TV stuck? Like, what is going on? That's my idea. Save millions of dollars on the ad agency and hiring Rob Riggle and Sofia Vergara or whatever you say it from Modern Family.
You got
I'm
it right.
Saving all that money. I'm just putting my website, myfrontpagestory.com, on the TV screen for all 30 seconds for 5.6 mil. Boom. Genius.
Hey, Ross, quick thoughts on this news that Jacksonville will play two home games next year in London overseas. And for me, I play in Jacksonville.
I think they're going. So first of all, I don't believe any of these guys, right? Like, you know, Stan Kroenke acted like he wanted to stay in St. Louis. He knew for years he was going to L.A., right? I mean, the Spanos is like – I don't really believe any of these owners, and in all sincerity, they really haven't given us a reason to believe them, right? I mean, they're going to do what's best for them. I'm not mad at them. I would do the same thing if I were the owner. I got a couple small businesses. I would do the same thing if I were them. But Shad Khan saying, you know, playing two games over in London gives us a better chance to build a new stadium with more revenue in Jacksonville. Come on, dude. Like, so first of all, if anything, they're going to leverage the chance that they could go to London to get more money from the city of Jacksonville, from Duval County, and from the state of Florida, right? Like, they're not like, oh, we're getting more money in London so we can build a stadium in Jacksonville. No, if anything, it's like, hey, man, London kind of wants us. You guys need to pony up. And so that's possible. But I think Shad Khan, I think he wants to go over there. I really do. And maybe I'm wrong. I've heard that they're talking about this big shopping center and all this stuff around the Jacksonville new stadium. And, you know, if that happens, then they're not going to move. But I don't really believe him. I think he wants it to be the London Shagwars. And, bought like Wembley Stadium. You know, they're more popular over there. Football is more popular over there than it is in Jacksonville now on some level. I think he thinks it would be a global icon. I think he loves the idea. I think he's enamored by the idea. And I don't blame him. I love the idea of spreading football to London. I mean, think about this, guys. We're talking in Texas right now. There are, like, I don't know, millions upon millions of little kids around the world that think that soccer is the best sport. I mean, when people don't want the NFL to spread, I'm like, can't we please think of the children? There are like kids all over the globe that think soccer is the best sport. I played soccer till I was 12, till my parents finally let me play football. It was cool when I scored a goal in soccer. You know what's really cool? Running into another kid as hard as I can, knocking him over. It's hilarious every time. And everybody around the country and around the world need to know what we know and what they especially know in Texas, which is that football is way better than soccer. And if we need to send the Jaguars over to London to make sure everybody in Europe realizes that, I'm okay with that.
Hey, man, I'm all with that too, Ross, man. I appreciate you calling in each and every week, man. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. See you, dudes. Great job.
That was Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home, his new show out on Radio.com/home or search home on the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.